Anakin stood in the living room of Padme's apartment, absorbing the silence around him, using the lack of physical noise to bolster his mental connection to that more subtle realm of the Force, feeling the life about him as clearly as if his five physical senses were all attuned to it. His eyes were closed, but he could see the region about him clearly enough, could sense any disturbance in the Force. Anakin's eyes popped open wide, his gaze darting about the room, and he pulled his lightsaber from his belt. Or almost did, stopping fast when the door slid open and Master Kenobi walked into the room. Obi-Wan looked about curiously, his gaze settling on Anakin. "Captain Typho has more than enough men downstairs," he said. "No assassin will try that way. Any activity up here?"
"Quiet as a tomb," Anakin replied. "I don't like just waiting here for something to happen."
Obi-Wan gave a little shake of his head, a movement showing his resignation concerning Anakin's predictability, and took a view scanner from his belt, checking his screen. His expression, shifting from curious to confused to concerned, spoke volumes to Anakin. He knew that Obi-Wan could see only part of Padme's bedroom, the door area, and R2-D2 standing by the wall, but nothing more. The Jedi Knight's expression asked the question before he even spoke the words.
"Padme, Senator Amidala covered the cam," the Padawan explained. "I don't think she liked me watching her."
Obi-Wan's face tensed, and he let out a little growl.
"What is she thinking? Her security is paramount, and is compromised."
"She programmed R2 to warn us if there's an intruder," Anakin explained, trying to calm Obi-Wan before his concern could gain any real momentum.
"It's not an intruder I'm worried about," Obi-Wan countered. "Or not merely an intruder. There are many ways to kill a senator."
"I know, but we also want to catch this assassin," Anakin said, his tone determined, stubborn even.
"Don't we, Master?"
"You're using her as bait?"
Obi-Wan asked incredulously, his eyes widening with shock and disbelief.
"It was her idea," Anakin protested, but his sharp tone showed clearly that he agreed with the plan.
"Don't worry, no harm will come to her. I can sense everything going on in that room, trust me."
"It's too risky," Obi-Wan scolded.
"Besides, your senses aren't that attuned, young learner."
Anakin parsed his words and his tone carefully, trying to sound not defensive, but rather suggestive.
"And yours are?"
Obi-Wan could not deny the look of intrigue that crossed his face.
"Possibly," he admitted.
Anakin smiled and nodded, and closed his eyes again, falling into the sensations of the Force, following them to Padme, who was sleeping quietly. He wished that he could see her, could watch the quiet rise and fall of her belly, could hear her soft breathing, could smell the freshness of her hair, could feel the smoothness of her skin, could kiss her and taste the sweetness of her lips. He had to settle for this, for feeling her life energy in the Force. A place of warmth it was. In a different way, Padme was thinking of Anakin as well. He was there beside her, in her dreams. She saw the fighting match that she knew would soon ensue in the Senate. The screaming and fist-waving, the threats and the loud objections. How badly it drained her. Anakin was there. Her dream became a nightmare. Some unseen assassin chasing her, blaster bolts whipping past her, and her feet seemed as if they were stuck in deep mud. But Anakin rushed past, his lightsaber ignited and waving, deflecting the blaster bolts aside. Padme shifted a bit and gave a little groan. On many levels, as uncomfortable with the identity of a rescuer as she was with the presence of the assassin. She didn't truly awaken, though, just thrashed a bit and raised her head, opening her eyes only briefly before burying her face in her pillow. She didn't see the small round droid hovering behind the blinds outside her window. She didn't see the appendages come out of it, attaching to the window, or the sparks arcing about those arms as the droid shut down the security system. She didn't see the larger arm deploy, cutting a hole in the glass, nor did she hear the slight faint sound as the glass was removed. Over by the door in Padme's room, R2-D2's lights went on. The droid's domed head swiveled about, scanning the room, and he gave a soft, but then, apparently detecting nothing amiss, the droid shut back down. Outside, a small tube came forth from the probe droid, moving to the hole in the window, and crawling through it, into Padme's room, came a pair of Kuhoons, like bloated white maggots with lines of black legs along their sides, and nasty mandibles. Dangerous as those mandibles looked, though, the true danger of the Kuhoons lay at the other end, the tail stinger, dripping of venom. The vicious Kuhoons crawled in through the blinds and started immediately toward the bed and the sleeping woman. "You look tired," Obi-Wan said to Anakin in the adjoining room. The Padawan, still standing, opened his eyes and came out of his meditative trance. He took a moment to register the words, and then gave a little shrug, not disagreeing. "I don't sleep well anymore." That was hardly news to Obi-Wan. "Because of your mother?" he asked. "I don't know why I keep dreaming about her now," Anakin answered, frustration coming through in his voice. "I haven't seen her since I was little." "Your love for her was, and remains, deep," Obi-Wan said. "That is hardly reason for despair." "But these are more than..." Anakin started to say, but he stopped and sighed and shook his head. "Are they dreams, or are they visions? Are they images of what has been, or do they tell of something that is yet to be? Or are they just dreams?" Obi-Wan said, his gentle smile showing through his scraggly beard. "Not every dream is a premonition, some vision or some mystical connection. Some dreams are just dreams. And even Jedi have dreams, young Padawan." Anakin didn't seem very satisfied with that. He just shook his head again. "Dreams pass in time," Obi-Wan told him. "I'd rather dream of Padme," Anakin replied with a sly smile. "Just being around her again is intoxicating." Obi-Wan's sudden frown erased both his and Anakin's smiles. "Mind your thoughts, Anakin," he scolded in no uncertain tone. "They betray you. You've made a commitment to the Jedi Order, a commitment not easily broken, and the Jedi's stand on such relationships is uncompromising. Attachment is forbidden." He gave a little derisive snort and looked toward the sleeping senator's room. "And don't forget that she's a politician. They're not to be trusted." "She's not like the others in the Senate, Master," Anakin protested strongly. Obi-Wan eyed him carefully. "It's been my experience that senators focus only on pleasing those who fund their campaigns, and they are more than willing to forget the niceties of democracy to get those funds." "Not another lecture, Master," Anakin said with a profound sigh. He had heard this particular diatribe repeatedly. "At least not on the economics of politics." Obi-Wan was no fan of the politics of the Republic. He started speaking again, or tried to, but Anakin abruptly interrupted. "Please, Master," he said emphatically. "Besides, you're generalizing. I know that Padme..." "Senator Amidala," Obi-Wan sternly corrected. "Isn't like that," Anakin finished. "And the Chancellor doesn't seem to be corrupt." "Palpatine's a politician. I've observed that he is very clever at following the passions and prejudices of the senators." "I think he is a good man," Anakin stated. "My instincts are very positive about..." The young Padawan trailed off, his eyes widening, his expression becoming one of shock. "I sense it too," Obi-Wan said breathlessly. And the two Jedi exploded into motion. Inside the bedroom, the Kuhoons crawled slowly and deliberately toward the sleeping Padme's exposed neck and face, their mandibles clicking excitedly. R2-D2 shrieked, catching on to the threat. The droid tootled a series of alarms and focused the light on the bed, highlighting the centipede invaders perfectly as Obi-Wan and Anakin burst into the room. Padme awoke, her eyes going wide, sucking in her breath in terror as the wicked little creature stood up and hissed and came at her. Or would have, except that Anakin was there. His blue lightsaber blade slashing across, just above the bed covers, once and again slicing both creatures in half. "Droid!" Obi-Wan cried, and Anakin and Padme turned to see him rushing for the window. There, hovering outside, was the remote assassin, its appendages retracting fast. Obi-Wan leapt into the blinds, taking them with him right through the window, shattering the glass. He reached into the Force as he leapt, using it to extend his jump, to send him far through the air to catch hold of the retreating droid assassin. With its added weight, the floating droid sank considerably, but it compensated and stabilized quickly, leaving the Jedi hanging onto it 100 stories up. Off flew the droid, taking Obi-Wan with it. "Anakin?" Padme asked, turning to him. When she saw him return the look, and saw the sudden flicker of intensity in his blue eyes, she pulled her nitrous higher about her shoulders.
"Stay here," Anakin instructed. "Watch your R2.
He rushed for the door, only to stop abruptly as Captain Typho and a pair of guards, along with the handmaiden Dorme, charged in.
"See to her,"
was all that Anakin explained, as he scrambled past them, running full out for the turbo lifts. Not without defensive systems, the probe droid repeatedly sent electrical shocks arcing over its surface, stinging Obi-Wan's hands. The Jedi Knight gritted through the pain, having no alternative but to hold on. He knew he shouldn't look down, but he did so anyway to see the city teeming far, far below. Another shock nearly sent him plummeting toward that distant bustle. Reflexively, and hardly considering all the implications, the Jedi fumbled with one hand, found a power wire, and pulled it free, ceasing the electrical shocks. But ending, too, the power that kept the probe droid aloft. Down they went, falling like stones, the lights of the various floors flashing past them like strobes as they dropped. "Not good, not good," Obi-Wan said over and over as he worked frantically to reconnect the wire. Finally, he got it. The probe droid's lights blinked back on, and off the remote soared, with Obi-Wan hanging on desperately. The droid wasted no time in reigniting the series of electrical shocks, stinging the Jedi, but not shaking the stubborn man free. Anakin was in no mood to wait for a turbo lift. Out came his lightsaber, and with a single, well-placed thrust, the Padawan had the doors open, though the turbo lift car was nowhere near his floor. Anakin didn't even pause long enough to discern if it was above him or below. He just leapt into the shaft, catching hold of one of the supporting poles within with one arm, propping the side of his foot tight against it and spinning downward. His mind whirled, trying to remember the layout of the building and which levels held the various docking bays. Suddenly, that sixth sense, feeling through the Force, alerted him to danger. "Yikes!" he yelled as he looked down to see the turbo lift racing up at him. Grabbing on tighter to the pole, he held his open palm downward, then sent a tremendous force push below, not to stop the lift, but to propel himself back up the shaft, keeping him ahead of the lift with sufficient speed for him to reorient himself and land, sprawled atop the speeding car. Again, whipping out his lightsaber, he stabbed it through the catch in the lift's top half. Ignoring the shrieks from the car's occupants below, Anakin pulled open the hatch, grabbed the edge as he shut off his blade, then somersaulted into the car. "Docking bay level?" he asked the pair of stunned senators, a Sulistan and a human.
47,
the human responded at once.
"Too late,"
the Sulistan added, noting the rolling floor numbers. The diminutive senator started to add.
"Next is 60-something.
But Anakin slammed the brake button. And when that didn't work fast enough for him, he reached into the Force again and grabbed at the braking mechanisms, forcing them even more tightly into place. All three went off the floor with a sudden stop, the Sulistan landing hard. Anakin banged on the door, yelling for it to open. A hand on his shoulder slowed him, and he turned to see the human senator step by, one finger held up in a gesture, bidding the eager young Jedi to wait. The senator pushed a button, clearly marked on the panel, and the turbolift door slid open. With a shrug and a sheepish smile, Anakin had to fall to his belly and squeeze through the opening to drop to the hallway below. He ran frantically, left and then right, finally spotting a balcony adjacent to the parking garage. Out he ran, then vaulted over a rail, dropping to a line of parked speeders. One yellow snub-nosed speeder was open, so he jumped in, firing it up, and zooming away, off the platform and then up, up, heading for the line of traffic flowing high above. He tried to get his bearings as he rose. What side of the building was he now on? And which side had Obi-Wan flown away from? And what angle had the fleeing probe droid taken? As he tried to sort it all out, Anakin realized that only one of two things could possibly put him on Obi-Wan's trail. Dumb luck. Or... The Padawan fell into the Force yet again, searching for the sensation that he could identify as his Jedi Master. Zam Wessel leaned against the side of her speeder, impatiently tapping her gloved fingers on the roof of the old vehicle. She wore an oversized purple helmet, front-wedged and solid, save a small rectangle cut out about her eyes. But while that hid her assumed beauty, her form-fitting grav suit showed every feminine curve. Zam didn't think much about it at that time, though, for with this particular mission, it was more important that she merely blend in. Often she had taken assignments where her assumed feminine wiles had helped her tremendously, where she had played upon the obvious weakness of a male to get close. Those wiles weren't going to help her with this assignment, though, and Zam knew it. This time, she was out to kill a woman, a senator, and one who was very well guarded by beings absolutely devoted to her, as protective of her as a parent might be to a child. Zam wondered what this woman might have done to so invoke the wrath of her employers. Or at least, she started to wonder, as she had started to wonder several times since Jango had hired her to kill the senator. The professional assassin never truly let her thoughts travel down that path. It wasn't her business. She was not a moral gauge for anyone, not one to decide the value of her assignment or the justice or injustice involved. She was just a tool. In many ways, a machine. She was the extension of her employers, and nothing more. Jango had bade her to kill Amidala, and so she would kill Amidala, fly back and collect her due, and go on to the next assignment. It was clean, and it was simple. Zam could hardly believe that the explosive charge she had managed to hide on the landing platform had not done the job. But she had taken that lesson to heart, had come to understand that the weaknesses of Senator Amidala were not easily discerned and exploited. The changeling banged her fist on the roof of the speeder. She hated that she had been forced to go outside for help, to procure a probe droid to do the task that she so relished handling personally. But now there were Jedi about Amidala, by all the rumors, and Zam had little desire to do battle with one of those troublesome fanatics. She glanced into the speeder, to the timepiece on the console, and nodded grimly. The job should be completed by now. The poisonous cahoons had been delivered, likely, and one scratch of a venomous stinger should be more than enough. Zam stood up straight, sensing something, some sudden feeling of uneasiness. She heard a cry of surprise or of fear, and she glanced all about. And then her eyes, within the cut-out rectangle of the helmet, went wide indeed. She watched in blank amazement as the probe droid, her programmed assassin, wove through the towering buildings of Coruscant, with a man dressed like a Jedi hanging onto it. Zam's fear lessened, and her smile widened, though, as she watched the droid go into defensive action. For this one was well programmed. It smacked against the side of a building, nearly dislodging the Jedi, and when that didn't work, the clever droid dove back into the traffic lane, soaring behind a speeder just above the vehicle's exhaust. The Jedi squirmed and tucked and somehow managed to keep himself out of that fiery exhaust, and so the droid swooped off to the side, taking a different tack. It flew in low over the top of one building. Zam's eyes widened as she watched the spectacle. She was impressed at the way the Jedi did not allow himself to be slammed off, but rather tucked his legs enough to run along the rooftop as the droid skimmed across it. Oh, he was good. This was truly entertaining to the confident bounty hunter. But enough was enough. Zam reached into the speeder and pulled out a long blaster rifle, casually lifting and leveling. She fired off a series of shots, and explosions ignited all about the Jedi and the droid. Zam looked up from her sights, stunned to see that the crafty man had somehow avoided those shots, had dodged, or had, she mused, used his Jedi powers to deflect them. "Block this," the bounty hunter said, raising the rifle again. Taking aim at the Jedi's chest, she lifted the barrel just a bit and squeezed the trigger. The probe droid exploded. The Jedi plummeted from sight. Zam sighed and shrugged, telling herself that the cost of the probe droid was worth the show. And hopefully the victory. If Senator Amidala lay dead in her room, then that cost would be a minor thing indeed. For this bounty exceeded anything Zam had ever hoped to collect. The bounty hunter slipped her rifle back into her speeder, then bent low and squeezed in, soaring off into the Coruscant traffic lanes. Obi-Wan screamed as he dropped. 10 stories. 20. There was nothing in his Jedi repertoire to save him this time. He looked all about frantically, but there was nothing. No handholds, no platform, no awning of thick and padded cloth. Nothing. Just another 500 stories to the ground. He tried to find a sense of calm, tried to fall into the Force and accept this unwelcomed end. And then a speeder swooped beside him, and he saw that cocky smile of his unruly Padawan, and never in his life had Obi-Wan Kenobi been happier to see anything. "Hitchhikers usually stand on the platforms," Anakin informed him, and he swooped the speeder near enough for Obi-Wan to grab on. "A novel approach, though. Gets the attention of passing traffic." Obi-Wan was too busy clawing his way into the passenger seat to offer a retort. He finally settled in next to Anakin. "I almost lost you there," the Padawan remarked. "No kidding. What took you so long?" Anakin eased back in his seat, putting his left arm up on the door of the open speeder and assuming a casual posture. "Oh, you know, Master," he said flippantly. "I couldn't find a speeder I really liked. One with an open cockpit, of course, and with the right speed capabilities to catch your droid scooter. And then, you know, I had to hold out for just the right color." "There!" Obi-Wan shouted, pointing up to a closed-in speeder, recognizing it as the one behind the assassin who had been shooting at him. It soared above them, and Anakin cut hard on the wheel and the stick, angling in fast pursuit. Almost immediately, an arm came out of the lead speeder's open window, holding a blaster pistol, and the bounty hunter squeezed off a series of shots. "If you'd spend as much time working on your lightsaber skills as you do on your wit, young Padawan, you would rival Master Yoda," Obi-Wan said. And he ducked, getting jostled about, as Anakin cut a series of evasive turns. "I thought I already did." "Only in your mind, my very young Padawan," Obi-Wan retorted. He gave a little cry and ducked reflexively as Anakin dived in and out of traffic, narrowly missing several vehicles.
"Careful! Hey, easy! You know I don't like it when you do that."
"Sorry, I forgot you don't like flying, Master," Anakin said,
his voice rising at the end as he took the speeder down suddenly to avoid another blaster bolt from the stubborn bounty hunter.
"I don't mind flying," Obi-Wan insisted, "but what you're doing is suicide."
His words nearly caught in his throat, along with his stomach, as Anakin cut hard to the right, then dropped suddenly, punched the throttle, pulled back to the left, and lifted the nose, zipping the speeder up through the traffic lane and back in sight of the bounty hunter, only to see another line of blaster bolts coming at him. Then the bounty hunter dived to the side suddenly, and both Jedi opened their eyes and their mouths wide, their screams drowned out by a commuter train crossing right in front of them. Obi-Wan tasted bile again, but somehow Anakin managed to avoid the train coming out the other side. Obi-Wan looked over to his Padawan to see him assuming a casual, in-control posture.
"Master, you know I've been flying since before I could walk," Anakin said with a sly grin.
I'm very good at this.
Just slow down, Obi-Wan instructed, in a voice that suggested the dignified Jedi Knight was about to throw up. Anakin ignored him, taking the speeder in fast pursuit of the assassin, right into a line of giant trucks. Around and around they went, cutting fast corners through the traffic, over the traffic, under the traffic, and around the buildings, always keeping the assassin's speeder in sight. Anakin took his craft right up on edge, skimming the side of one building. He can't lose me, the Padawan boasted. He's getting desperate. Great, Obi-Wan answered dryly.
Oh, wait,
Obi-Wan added, when the speeder in front dived into a tram tunnel.
Don't go in there!
But Anakin zoomed right in and then zoomed right back out, a huge rushing train chasing him, and Obi-Wan screaming about as loudly as the train was blowing its horn.
You know I don't like it when you do that!
Sorry, Master, Anakin answered unconvincingly.
Don't worry. This guy's gonna kill himself any minute now. Well, let him do that alone,
Obi-Wan insisted. They watched as the assassin zoomed right into traffic, soaring the wrong way down a congested lane. Anakin went in right behind. Both speeders zigged and zagged wildly, frantically, the occasional blaster bolt shooting back from the lead one. And then, suddenly, the assassin cut fast, straight up, a tight loop that brought Zam behind the two Jedi.
Great move,
Anakin congratulated. I got one, too. He slammed on his brakes, reversing thrust, and the assassin's speeder flashed up right beside them. And there was the assassin, firing point-blank at Obi-Wan.
What are you doing?
Obi-Wan demanded.
He's going to blast me!
Right, Anakin agreed, working frantically to maneuver away.
This isn't working. Nice of you to notice.
Obi-Wan dodged, then lurched as the speeder dropped suddenly, Anakin taking it right under the assassins.
He can't shoot us down here,
the Padawan congratulated himself. But his smile lasted only the split second it took for their opponent's new tactic to register. The assassin swerved out of the traffic lane and shot straight for a building, coming in at an angle to just skim the rooftop. Obi-Wan started to shout out Anakin's name, but the word came out as,
"Ananana!"
The Padawan was in control, though, and he slowed and lifted his speeder's nose just up over the edge of the rooftop. Another obstacle showed itself almost immediately. A large craft coming in low and slow.
It's landing!
Obi-Wan shouted. And when Anakin didn't immediately respond, he added desperately,
On us!
It came out,
On us!
As Anakin brought the speeder up on edge and zipped around a corner, clipping a flagpole and taking its cloth contents free.
Clear that,
the seemingly unshakable Padawan said, nodding down to the torn flag, which had caught itself in one of the speeder's front air scoops.
What? Clear the flag! We're losing power! Hurry!
Complaining under his breath with every movement, Obi-Wan crawled out of the cockpit and gingerly onto the front engine. He bent low and tugged the flag free, and the speeder lurched forward, nearly dislodging him.
Don't do that, he screamed. I don't like it when you do that.
So sorry, Master.
He's heading for the power refinery, Obi-Wan said.
But take it easy. It's dangerous near those power couplings.
Anakin zoomed right past one of the couplings, and a huge electrical bolt had the air crackling all about them.
Slow down, Obi-Wan ordered. Slow down! Don't go through there!
But Anakin did just that, banking left, right, left.
What are you doing?
Sorry, Master!
More bolts crackled all about them. Right, left, right again, up and over, down and around, and somehow, incredibly, out the other side.
Oh, that was good, Obi-Wan admitted.
That was crazy.
The rattled Anakin corrected. The older Jedi snapped a glare at him, recognized the greenish color that had suddenly come to the Padawan's face, and then just put his head in his hands and groaned.
Got him now, Anakin announced.
The assassin was sliding his speeder sidelong around a corner between two buildings up ahead. Anakin went right around behind, only to find the lead speeder stopped and blocking the alleyway. The assassin leaning out the door, blaster pistol leveled.
Ah, blast!
Padawan remarked.
Stop!
Obi-Wan told him, and both ducked as a line of bolts came at them.
No, we can make it!
Anakin insisted, punching the throttle. He dived his speeder under the assassin's, barely missing it, then went up on edge, slipping through a small gap in the building. But there were pipes there, and no level of flying could put the speeder safely through them. They bounced sidelong, then flipped end over end, narrowly missing a giant crane and clipping some struts. The damage brought forth a giant fiery gas ball, nearly immolating them, and in the uncontrolled spin that followed, they bounced off yet another building, and the speeder stalled out. Anakin winced, expected a line of curses to come at him, but when he finally looked at Obi-Wan, he saw the Jedi staring straight ahead, eyes wide and unblinking, and saying,
I'm crazy. I'm crazy. I'm crazy.
Over and over again.
But it worked, Anakin dared to say. We made it. It didn't work, Obi-Wan yelled at him. We've stalled, and you almost got us killed.
Anakin looked down at his hands and body and waggled his fingers.
I think we're still alive.
He grinned, trying to disarm his fuming master. But Obi-Wan seemed as if he was about to explode.
It was stupid, he roared.
Anakin worked wildly, trying to restart the speeder. I could have made it, he protested sheepishly. His confident expression strengthened as the speeder roared back to life.
But you didn't, and now we've lost him.
Even as Obi-Wan finished, a barrage of laser bolts rained down on them, setting off explosions that rocked them back and forth. The pair looked up to see the assassin zooming away.
No, we didn't, a smiling Anakin said.
He took the speeder up, the sudden thrust violently throwing them both back in their seats. They came through the area of smoke and carnage with several small fires burning on their speeder. Obi-Wan slapped at flames in the control panel. Again, they chased the assassin into the main travel lanes, dodging and turning fast about incoming traffic. Up ahead, the assassin cut fast to the left, between two buildings, and Anakin responded, going right and up.
Where are you going?
A perplexed Obi-Wan asked.
He went down there, the other way.
This is a shortcut, I think.
What do you mean, you think? What kind of shortcut? He went completely the other way. You've lost him.
Master, if we keep this chase going, that creep's gonna end up deep-fried, Anakin tried to explain.
Personally, I'd very much like to find out who he is and who he's working for.
Oh, Obi-Wan replied, his voice dripping with sarcasm. So that's why we're going in the wrong direction.
Anakin took them up and around, finally settling into a hover some 50 stories up from the street.
Well, you lost him, Obi-Wan said.
I'm deeply sorry, Master, Anakin replied.
Again, he seemed hardly convincing, as if he was saying just what he had to say to keep Obi-Wan from scolding him further. The Jedi Knight looked at him hard, ready to call him on it, when he noticed that Anakin, seemingly deep in concentration, was counting softly.
Excuse me for a moment, the Padawan said.
He stood up, and to Obi-Wan's complete shock, stepped out of the speeder. Obi-Wan lurched over to the edge and stared down, watching Anakin drop about 5 stories before landing atop the roof of a familiar speeder that was zooming beneath them.
I hate it when he does that, Obi-Wan muttered incredulously, shaking his head.
Zam Wessel skimmed close to the buildings, staying to the side of the main traffic lanes. She didn't know whether the probe droid had successfully completed its mission, but she was feeling pretty good at that moment, having outwitted a pair of Jedi. Suddenly, her speeder shook hard. At first, she thought she had been hit by a blaster bolt, but then, surveying for damage, she came to know the truth of the missile, and to know that it, that he, had somehow landed on her speeder. Zam backed off on the throttle, then slammed it out full, lurching the craft ahead. The force of the sudden acceleration nearly dislodged Anakin, sending him sliding back to the tail, but he hung on stubbornly, and to Zam's dismay, even began crawling back toward the cockpit. With a sneer, Zam hit the brakes hard, and Anakin went sliding and bouncing past her. But the stubborn young Jedi caught one of the twin front forks of the speeder and hung on yet again. Zam accelerated and reached out her blaster pistol, letting fly a series of bolts in Anakin's general direction. The angle was wrong, though, and she couldn't score any hits. And there he was, crawling back stubbornly toward the roof, despite all of Zam's evasive maneuvers. Her claw-like form came back suddenly and briefly, as she lost concentration, but she recovered quickly. The bounty hunter cursed under her breath and swooped back into traffic, trying to formulate some plan for ridding herself of the troublesome Jedi. She went back into her evasive traffic-dodging maneuvers yet again, entertaining the thought of moving in close to some of the heavier traffic and letting the exhaust plume smoke the fool atop her craft. She had almost convinced herself to do just that, when suddenly, a glowing blue blade of energy sheared through the top of her speeder and plunged down beside her. She looked up to see the stubborn young Jedi cutting through the roof. Swerving all about, she fired up a shot at him, then another. Finally, to her relief, a shot took the lightsaber from his hand, though whether she had taken the hand as well, or just the weapon, she could not tell. Obi-Wan had finally caught sight of Zam's speeder, with Anakin scrambling atop it, when the lightsaber tumbled from the Padawan's grasp. Obi-Wan gave a shake of his head and dived his speeder toward the street, angling for an interception. Anakin's hand plunged through the hole in the roof, and Zam lifted her blaster pistol in his direction. He didn't reach for her, just held his hand there, outstretched, and before she could fire, some unseen force yanked the pistol from her hand, throwing it right into the Jedi's grasp.
No!
The bounty hunter yelled, gasping in astonishment. She lurched in her seat, letting go of her speeder's controls to grab the pistol desperately with both hands. The pair struggled over the weapon, the speeder dipping right and left. And then the pistol went off, hitting neither opponent, but blowing a hole in the flooring of Zam's speeder, cutting some control pipes in the process. The speeder careened out of control, and Zam fell back, over the controls desperately but futilely. They dived and spun sidelong and head over. Screaming, both hung on for dear life as they spiraled toward the street. Finally, at the last possible second, Zam gained some control, enough to turn the impending crash into a spark-throwing skid along the broken permacrete of the seedy section of Coruscant's belly. The speeder bounced up on edge and slammed to a halt, and Anakin went flying, tumbling along the street for a long, long way. When he finally got control, he saw the assassin leaping from the speeder and running down the street, so he climbed back to his feet and started to follow. The splash, as he stepped in one dirty puddle, woke Anakin to the harsh realities about him. This was the underbelly of Coruscant, the smelly and dirty streets. He slowed, the assassin was out of sight anyway, and looked about curiously, noting the many lowlifes, mostly non-humans of quite a variety of species. The Padawan crinkled his nose in surprise and incredulity to see beings panhandling up and down the street. He shook it all away quickly, though, reminding himself of the real reason he was here, and of Padme and her need for security. Spurred by images of the beautiful senator from Naboo, the young Jedi sprinted along the broken sidewalk, catching sight of the assassin moving through a crowd of ruffians. Anakin charged right in behind, pushing and shoving, but making little headway against the press. He spotted the assassin at the last second before the helmeted killer disappeared through a doorway. Anakin shoved through, finally, and glanced up to see the glare of the gambling sign above the establishment. Undaunted, he started again for the door, and then stopped as he heard Obi-Wan calling. A familiar yellow speeder dropped to a resting place on the side of the street. Anakin! Obi-Wan walked toward the young Jedi, pointedly holding Anakin's dropped lightsaber in his hand. She went into that club, Master. Obi-Wan patted his hand in the air to calm the Padawan, not even registering Anakin's surprising use of the feminine pronoun. Patience, he said. Use the Force, Anakin. Think. Sorry, Master. He went in there to hide, not run, Obi-Wan reasoned. Yes, Master. Obi-Wan held the lightsaber out toward his student. Next time, try not to lose it. Sorry, Master. Obi-Wan pulled the precious weapon back as Anakin reached for it, and held the young Padawan's gaze with his own stern look. A Jedi's lightsaber is his most precious possession.
Yes, Master.
Again, Anakin reached for the lightsaber, and again, Obi-Wan pulled it back, never letting Anakin go from his scrutinizing stare. He must keep it with him at all times.
I know, Master, Anakin replied, a bit of exasperation creeping into his tone. This weapon is your life.
I've heard this lesson before. Obi-Wan held it out again, finally relinquishing that awful stare, and Anakin took the weapon and replaced it on his belt.
But you haven't learned anything, Anakin, the Jedi Knight said, turning away. I try, Master.
There was sincerity in his tone, Obi-Wan clearly recognized, and a bit of regret, perhaps. And that reminded Obi-Wan of the difficult circumstances under which Anakin had entered the Order. He had been far too old, nearly 10 years of age, and Master Qui-Gon had taken him in without permission, without the blessing of the Jedi Council. Master Yoda had seen potential danger in young Anakin Skywalker. No one they had ever encountered had been stronger with the Force, in terms of sheer potential. But the Jedi Order normally required training from the earliest possible age. The Force was too powerful a tool. No, not a tool. And that was the problem. An unwise Jedi might consider the Force a tool, a means to his own ends. But a true Jedi understood that the Force was a partner on a concurrent course, a common pathway to true harmony and understanding. After Qui-Gon's death at the hands of a Sith Lord, the Jedi Council had rethought their decision about young Anakin and had allowed his training to go forward, with Obi-Wan fulfilling his promise to Qui-Gon that he would take the talented young boy under his tutelage. The Council had been hesitant, though, and obviously not happy about it. Yoda had seemed almost resigned, as if this path was one that they could not deny, rather than one they would willingly and eagerly walk. For the whispers spoke of Anakin as the chosen one, the one who would bring balance to the Force. Obi-Wan wasn't sure what that meant, and he was more than a little fearful. He looked up at Anakin, who was standing patiently, properly subdued after the tongue-lashing, and he took comfort in that image, in this incredibly likable, somewhat stubborn, and obviously brash young man. He hid his smile, only because it would not do for Anakin to understand himself forgiven so easily for his rash actions and the loss of his weapon. Obi-Wan had to disguise a chuckle as a cough. After all, hadn't he been the one who had leapt out through a window 100 stories above the streets of Coruscant? The Jedi Knight led the way into the gambling club. Humans and non-humans mingled about in the smoky air, sipping drinks of every color and puffing on exotic pipes full of exotic plants. Many robes showed bulges reminiscent of weapons, and in looking around, both Jedi understood that everyone was a potential threat. Why do I think that you're going to be the death of me? Obi-Wan commented above the clamor. Don't say that, Master, Anakin replied seriously, and the intensity of his tone surprised Obi-Wan. You're the closest thing I have to a father. I love you, and I don't want to cause you pain. Then why don't you listen to me? I will, Anakin said eagerly. I'll do better, I promise. Obi-Wan nodded and glanced all around. Do you see him?
I think he's a she.
Then be extra careful, Obi-Wan said, and he gave a snort. And I think she's a changeling, Anakin added. Obi-Wan nodded to the crowd ahead of them. Go and find her. He started the opposite way. Where are you going, Master?
To get a drink, came the short response.
Anakin blinked in surprise to see his master heading for the bar. He almost started after, to inquire further, but he recalled the scolding he had just received and his promise to do better, to obey his master. He turned and started away, milling through the crowd, trying to hold his calm against the wave of faces staring at him, most with obvious suspicion, some even openly hostile. Over at the bar, Obi-Wan watched him for a bit, out of the corner of his eye. He signaled to the bartender, then watched as a glass was placed in front of him and amber liquid poured in.
Wanna buy some death sticks? Came a guttural voice from the side.
Obi-Wan didn't even turn to fully regard the speaker, who wore a wild mane of black hair, 2 antennae twirled up from his hair like curly horns.
Nobody's got better death sticks than Elon Sleazebagano,
the ruffian added, with a perfectly evil smile. You don't want to sell me death sticks, the Jedi coolly said, waggling his fingers slightly, bringing the weight of the Force into his voice.
I don't want to sell you death sticks,
Elon Sleazebagano obediently repeated. Again, the Jedi waggled his fingers. You want to go home and rethink your life.
I want to go home and rethink my life,
Elon readily agreed, and he turned and walked away. Obi-Wan tossed back his drink and motioned for the bartender to fill it up. A short distance away, walking among the crowd, Anakin continued his scan. Something didn't seem quite right to him, but of course, how could he expect it to in this seedy place? Still, some sensation nagged at him. Some mounting evil that seemed above the level expected even in here. He didn't actually see the blaster pistol coming out of the holster. Didn't see it rising up toward the apparently unsuspecting Obi-Wan's back. But he felt. Anakin spun as Obi-Wan spun, to see his master coming around, lightsaber igniting, in a beautiful and graceful turn with perfect balance. It seemed almost as if in slow motion to Anakin. Though, of course, Obi-Wan was moving with deadly speed and precision, as his blade, blue like Anakin's, cut a short vertical loop, and then a second, reaching farther out toward his foe. The would-be assassin, and he could see clearly now that it was a woman, since she had taken off her helmet, shrieked in agony as her arm, still clutching the blaster, fell free to the floor, sheared off above the elbow. The room exploded into motion, with Anakin rushing to Obi-Wan's side, club patrons leaping up all about them, bristling with nervous energy. Easy, Anakin said loudly, patting his hands in the air, imbuing his voice with the strength of the Force. Official business. Go back to your drinks. Gradually, very gradually, the club resumed its previous atmosphere, with conversations beginning again. Seeming hardly concerned, Obi-Wan motioned for Anakin to help him, and together they helped the assassin out to the street. They lowered her gently to the ground, and she started awake as soon as Obi-Wan began to attend her wounded arm. She growled ferally and winced in agony, all the while staring up hatefully at the two Jedi. Do you know who it was you were trying to kill? Obi-Wan asked her.
The senator from Naboo,
Zam Wessel said matter-of-factly, as if it hardly mattered. Who hired you? Her answer was a glare.
It was just a job.
Tell us,
Anakin demanded, coming forward threateningly. The tough bounty hunter didn't even flinch.
The senator's going to die soon anyway, she said. It won't end with me. For the price they're offering, there'll be bounty hunters lining up to take the hit. And the next one won't make the same mistake I did.
Tough as she was, she ended with a grunt and a groan. This wound's going to need more treatment than I can give it here, an obviously concerned Obi-Wan explained to Anakin. But if the younger man even cared, he didn't show it. His expression angry, he came forward.
Who hired you?
He asked again, and then he continued, throwing the full weight of the Force into his demand, a strength that surprised Obi-Wan, that came from something more than prudence or dedication to his current job.
Tell us now!
The bounty hunter continued to glare at him, but lips twitching, she started to answer.
It was a bounty hunter called...
They heard a puff from above, and the bounty hunter twitched and gasped, and simply expired, her human female features twisting grotesquely back into the lumpy form of her true Claudite nature. Anakin and Obi-Wan tore their eyes away from the spectacle to look up, and heard the roar as they watched an armored rocket man lift away into the Coruscant night, disappearing into the sky. Obi-Wan looked back to the dead creature and pulled a small item from her neck, holding it up for Anakin to see.
Toxic dot.
Anakin sighed and looked away. So they had foiled this attempt and killed one assassin. But it was clear to him that Senator Amidala, Padme, remained in grave danger. Chapter 9. Anakin stood quietly in the Jedi Council Chamber, encircled by the Masters of the Order. Beside him stood Obi-Wan, his master, but not one of the masters. Obi-Wan, like the majority of the 10,000 Jedi, was a knight, but these select few, sitting around the edges of the room, were masters, the highest-ranking members of the Order. Anakin had never been comfortable in this esteemed company. He knew that more than half of the Jedi Masters sitting here had expressed grave doubts about allowing him into the Order at the advanced age of 10. He knew that even after Yoda had swayed the vote to allow him to begin studying under Obi-Wan, a few continued to hold those doubts.
"Track down this bounty hunter, you must, Obi-Wan,"
Master Yoda said, as the others passed the toxic dart about.
"Most importantly, find out who he's working for," Mace Windu added.
"What about Senator Amidala?" Obi-Wan asked. "She will still need protecting." Anakin, anticipating what might be coming, straightened as Yoda turned his gaze his way.
"Handle that, your Padawan will."
Anakin felt his heart soar at Yoda's declaration, both because of the confidence obviously being shown in him, and also because this was one assignment he knew that he would truly enjoy.
"Anakin, escort the Senator back to her home planet of Naboo," Mace added. "She'll be safer there. And don't use registered transport. Travel as refugees."
Anakin nodded as the assignment was explained, but he knew immediately that there would be a few obstacles to such a course. As the leader of the opposition to the Military Creation Act, it will be very difficult to get Senator Amidala to leave the capital.
"Until caught, this killer is. Our judgment she must respect,"
Yoda replied. Anakin nodded. "But I know how deeply she cares about this upcoming vote, Master," he replied. "She is more concerned with defeating the Act than with—"
"Anakin," Mace interrupted. "Go to the Senate and ask Chancellor Palpatine to speak with her."
The tone of his voice made it clear that they had spent enough time on these issues. The Jedi Knight and his Padawan had their assignments, and Yoda dismissed them with a nod. Anakin was not nervous in the office of Chancellor Palpatine. Certainly he understood the man's power, and certainly he respected the office itself, but for some reason the young Padawan felt very comfortable here. Felt as if he was with a friend. He hadn't spent much time with Palpatine, but on those few occasions when he had spoken with the man privately, he had always felt as if the Supreme Chancellor was taking an honest interest in him. In some ways, Anakin felt as if Palpatine was an additional mentor. Not as directly as Obi-Wan, of course, but offering solid and important advice. More than that, though, Anakin always felt as if he was welcome here. "I will talk to her," Palpatine agreed, upon hearing Anakin's request that he speak with Padme about leaving Coruscant for the relative safety of Naboo. "Senator Amidala will not refuse an executive order. I know her well enough to assure you of that."
"Thank you, Your Excellency."
"And so, my young Padawan, they have finally given you an assignment,"
the Chancellor said with a wide and warm smile, the way a father might talk to a son.
"Your patience has paid off."
"Your guidance more than my patience," Anakin replied.
"I doubt my patience would have held had it not been for your assurances that my Jedi Masters were watching me, and that they would trust me with some important duties before too long."
Palpatine nodded and smiled.
"You don't need guidance, Anakin," he said. "In time, you will learn to trust your feelings." then you will be invincible. I have said it many times. You are the most gifted Jedi I have ever met.
Thank you, Your Excellency, Anakin replied coolly, though in truth, he had to consciously stop himself from trembling. Hearing such a compliment from one who did not understand, like from his mother, was much different than hearing it from Palpatine, the Supreme Chancellor of the Republic. This was an accomplished man, more accomplished perhaps than anyone else in all the galaxy. He was not an underling of Yoda or Mace Windu. Anakin understood that a man like Palpatine would not throw out such compliments if he did not believe them.
I see you becoming the greatest of all the Jedi, Anakin, Palpatine went on. Even more powerful than Master Yoda.
Anakin hoped his legs wouldn't simply buckle beneath him. He could hardly believe the words, and yet a part of him did believe them. There was a strength within him, a power beyond the limits the Jedi seemed to place upon him and upon themselves. Anakin sensed that clearly. He knew that Obi-Wan didn't understand, and that was his biggest frustration with his master. To Anakin's thinking, Obi-Wan's leash was far too short. He had no idea of how he might answer Palpatine's continuing compliments, so he just stood in the center of the room and smiled for a bit, while the Chancellor stood by the window, looking out at the endless streams of Coruscant traffic. After many moments had passed, Anakin worked up the courage to move around the desk and join him, following the Supreme Chancellor's gaze up at the traffic lanes. I'm concerned for my Padawan, Obi-Wan Kenobi said to Yoda and Mace Windu, as the three walked along the corridors of the Jedi Temple. He is not ready to be given this assignment on his own.
The Council is confident in this decision, Obi-Wan,
Yoda said.
The boy has exceptional skills, Mace agreed.
But he still has much to learn, Master, Obi-Wan explained. His skills have made him, well, arrogant.
Yes, yes,
Yoda agreed.
It's a flaw more and more common among Jedi. Too sure of themselves they are. Even the older, more experienced Jedi.
Obi-Wan considered the words with an assenting nod. They certainly rang true, and the current conditions among the Jedi in this time of mounting tension were a bit unsettling, with many off on their own, far from Coruscant. And had not arrogance played a major role in Count Dooku's decision to depart the Order and the Republic?
Remember, Obi-Wan, Mace remarked, if the prophecy is true, your apprentice is the only one who can bring the Force into balance.
How could Obi-Wan ever forget that little fact? Qui-Gon had been the first to see it, the first to predict that Anakin would be the one to fulfill the prophecy. What Qui-Gon, or anyone else for that matter, had failed to explain was exactly what bringing balance to the Force might mean. If he follows the right path, the Jedi Knight said to the two masters, and neither of them corrected him.
Attend to your own duties, you must,
Yoda reminded, drawing Obi-Wan from his distracting contemplation as surely as if he was reading the Jedi's mind.
When solved is this mystery of the assassin, other riddles might be answered.
Yes, Master, Obi-Wan replied, and he held the small dart he had taken from the dead Claudite up before his eyes.
With gentle hands, Shmi Skywalker Lars lifted the dull gold chest piece up to the wiry droid, setting it in place. She smiled at C-3PO, and though his face could not similarly twist, she could tell that he, too, in that curious droid-like way, was pleased. How often he had complained about the sand blowing into his wiring, chipping away at the silicon coverings, even breaking through and causing jarring jolts on a couple of occasions. And now Shmi was taking care of that problem, was finishing what Anakin had started in building the droid.
Now?
She managed to ask aloud, through lips caked with dried blood. No, she realized, it was not now. She had covered C-3PO those days ago, or was it weeks ago, or even years ago, when Kleeg had taken her to the moisture farm. Yes, there were spare coverings to fit the protocol droid in the garage area, against the wall, under an old workbench. She remembered that so clearly. but she had no idea of when it had been. And now, she was somewhere. She couldn't open her eyes to look around. She didn't have the strength at that moment, and the blood on them had dried, making any flutter of her eyelids painful. She thought it curious that her eyelids were the only place where she actually felt any real pain at that moment. She thought she was injured. She thought. Shmi heard something behind her, shuffling footsteps, then some mumbling. Yes, they were always mumbling. Her thoughts went back to C-3PO. Poor 3PO, who still needed his battered, wiry arms covered. Gently, she lifted the covering. She heard a sharp sound, or she knew it was a sharp sound, though she heard it only distantly, then felt a brush across her back. There were no nerves left there to register the bite of the whip any more clearly than that. Chapter 10 Anakin Skywalker and Jar Jar Binks stood at the door separating Padme's bedroom from the anteroom, where Anakin and Obi-Wan had kept watch the night before. Looking through the room to the broken window, the pair watched the Coruscant skyline, the endless lines of traffic. Padme and her handmaiden Dorme rushed about the bedroom, throwing the luggage together, and from her sharp movements, both Anakin and Jar Jar knew that they would do well to keep a fair distance from the upset and angry young senator. As the Jedi had requested, Chancellor Palpatine had intervened to bid Padme to return to Naboo. She was complying, but that did not mean that she was happy about it. With a profound sigh, Padme stood straight, one hand on her lower back, which ached from all the bending. She sighed again and moved before the two observers. "I'm taking an extended leave of absence," she said to Jar Jar, her voice thick and somber, as if she was hoping to inject some of that gravity into the goofy Gungan. "It will be your responsibility to take my place in the Senate. Representative Binks, I know I can count on you."
"Misa honored,"
Jar Jar blurted in reply, standing at attention, except that his head was wagging and his ears were flopping. One could dress a Gungan up like a dignitary, but such a creature's nature was not so easily changed. "What?" Padme's voice was stern and showed more than a little exasperation. She was entrusting something important to Jar Jar and was obviously not thrilled to hear him acting like his old goofy self. Obviously embarrassed, Jar Jar cleared his throat and stood a bit straighter.
"Misa honored to be taken on this a heavy burden. Misa accept this with muy humility and,
"Jar Jar, I don't wish to hold you up," Padme interrupted. "I'm sure you have a great deal to do."
"Of course, milady."
With a great bow, as if trying to use pretense to cover up the fact that he was blushing like a Dorellian fire crab, the Gungan turned and left, flashing a bright smile Anakin's way as he passed. Anakin's eyes followed the retreating Gungan, but any levity or sense of calm he felt from that last exchange was washed away a moment later, when Padme addressed him in a tone that reminded him that she was not in the best of moods. "I do not like this idea of hiding," she said emphatically. "Don't worry. Now that the Council has ordered an investigation, it won't take Master Obi-Wan long to find out who hired that bounty hunter. We should have done that from the beginning. It's better to take the offensive against such a threat, to find out the source rather than try to react to the situation." He meant to go on, to claim credit for asking for such an investigation from the very beginning, to let Padme know that he had been right all along, and that it had taken the Council long enough to come around to his way of thinking. He could see, though, that her eyes were already beginning to glaze over, so he quieted and let her speak. "And while your master investigates, I have to hide away." "That would be most prudent, yes." Padme gave a little sigh of frustration. "I haven't worked for a year to defeat the Military Creation Act, not to be here when its fate is decided. Sometimes we have to let go of our pride and do what is requested of us," Anakin replied. A rather unconvincing statement coming from him, and he knew as soon as he spoke the words that he probably shouldn't have phrased things quite like that.
"Pride?"
came the roaring response. "Annie, you're young and you don't have a very firm grip on politics. I suggest you reserve your opinions for some other time. Sorry, m'lady, I was only trying to... Annie, no! Please don't call me that.
What?
Annie. Please don't call me Annie. I've always called you that. It's your name, isn't it?
My name is Anakin.
The young Jedi said calmly, his jaw firm, his eyes strong.
When you say Annie, it's like I'm still a little boy.
And I'm not. Padme paused and looked him over, head to toe, nodding as she took the sight of him in completely. He could see sincerity on her face as she nodded her agreement, and her tone, too, became one of more respect.
I'm sorry, Anakin. It's impossible to deny that you've grown up.
There was something in the way she said that, Anakin sensed. Some suggestion, some recognition from Padme that he was indeed a man now. And perhaps a handsome one at that. That, combined with the little smile she flashed him, had him a bit flushed and put him back up on his heels. He found an ornament sitting on a shelf to the side then, and using the force, picked it up, letting it hover above his fingers, needing the distraction. Still, he had to clear his throat to cover his embarrassment, for he was afraid that his voice would break apart, as he admitted, Master Obi-Wan manages not to see it. He criticizes my every move, as if I was still a child. He didn't listen to me when I insisted that we go in search of the source of the assassination.
Mentors have a way of seeing more of our faults than we would like, Padme agreed. It's the only way we grow.
With a thought, Anakin used the force to lift the little globe ornament higher into the air, manipulating it all about. Don't get me wrong, he remarked. Obi-Wan is a great mentor. As wise as Master Yoda, and as powerful as Master Windu, I'm truly thankful to be his learner. Only, he paused and shook his head, looking for the words. Only, although I'm a Padawan learner, in some ways, in a lot of ways, I'm ahead of him. I'm ready for the trials. I know I am. He knows it too. He feels I'm too unpredictable. Other Jedi my age have gone through the trials and made it. I know I started my training late, but he won't let me move on. Padme's expression grew curious, and Anakin could well understand her puzzlement, for he too was surprised at how openly he was speaking, critically of Obi-Wan. He thought that he should stop right there, and silently berated himself. But then Padme said, with all sympathy, "That must be frustrating."
"It's worse," Anakin cried in response, willingly diving into that warm place. "He's overly critical. He never listens. He just doesn't understand. It's not fair."
He would have gone on and on, but Padme began to laugh, and that stopped Anakin as surely as a slap across the face.
"I'm sorry," she said through her giggles. "You sounded exactly like that little boy I once knew, when he didn't get his way."
"I'm not whining. I'm not." Across the room, Dorme, too, began to chuckle.
"I didn't say it to hurt you," Padme explained.
Anakin took a deep breath, then blew it all out of him, his shoulders visibly relaxing.
"I know."
He seemed so pitiable then, not pitiful, but just like a lost little soul. Padme couldn't resist. She walked over to him and lifted her hand to gently stroke his cheek. "Anakin." For the first time since they had been reunited, Padme truly looked into the blue eyes of the young Padawan, locked stares with him, so that they each could see beneath the surface, so that they each could view the other's heart. It was a fleeting moment, made so by Padme's common sense. She quickly altered the mood with a sincere but light-hearted request. "Don't try to grow up too fast."
"I am grown up," Anakin replied. "You said it yourself."
He finished by making his reply into something suggestive, as he looked deeply into Padme's beautiful brown eyes again.